podcast. This is tremendous. This is already, as long as this is actually recording, this is better than our first shot at this. I'm David Citrick. Along with me are co-hosts who you might know actually in the past year. Marcellus, a.k.a. Jeff the Sabertooth Anteater Hack, and my good friend Miles Hanley. How are you, Miles?
Doing good. How about yourself?
Okay, good. Splendid. Today on the agenda, Cubs baseball, spring training, good stuff like that. You'll see as we get to it. So let's dig right in, you guys. First thing we wanted to talk about on the agenda, Chris Bryant. How big is your Bryant boner at this point, you guys?
Visible from space.
Visible from space, sure. We were originally going to talk about where Bryant should start the season. That was what we talked about when we tried this the first time. I think at this point, you know, we're all pretty much on the same page, though. Like, we're all pretty gung-ho about the idea of getting an extra year of service time, right?
Yes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay,
and
that's why we're not going to talk about it.
I think the excuse he uses, he hasn't played any left field yet, so he might start a few weeks there. Sure. I mean, Theo doesn't care. He says that he's not going to listen to anyone. He shouldn't listen to anyone. He's way smarter than we are. But I think you'll probably see him take some reps at left field, and then, you know, in a month he'll come up and
destroy the entire National League.
That's sort of, for me, become the more interesting question is, like, what is this? Like, we were talking, he has 8 homers this spring. Nobody else last season in spring training had more than 6, and there are still 2 weeks to go in this season's spring training. What the hell is he doing to expectations at this point? Like, is he shooting himself in the foot?
Well, I don't think he cares. I think he's the kind of person that can handle whatever expectations are on him. But yeah, you're right. There are people that would be disappointed with a 5-WAR season, and if he had a 5-WAR season, I would probably dance naked in the street.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in my mind, there's no realistic possibility that he comes up with a 5-win season this year.
Yeah, oh no, for sure.
Yeah, everyone's been pretending that Mike Trout doesn't exist in the sense of his expectations, but at the same time, everyone's saying, like, oh, you know, no one this good has ever been fucked around with service time issues, but, you know, Mike Trout started the season a month late.
Like, even Evan Longoria had to wait, I think, what, two weeks, or at least, I can't remember.
Did they bring him up after he signed his extension? I don't remember.
Oh, no,
he signed that mega extension.
Yeah. He came up, I think, as soon as they got the extension signed, if I remember correctly.
Which, I don't think Chris Bryant's going to do one of those, so...
No.
Yeah, it's about as safe a bet as there is there.
I think Boris would slap him in the face multiple times before that would happen. But it is weird how as the baseball becomes more sort of, and by baseball I mean your average baseball fan becomes more prospect savvy, and you have things like Baseball's Prospectus. And Baseball America becomes more available, and you have more worse than that. It's weird how it has sort of fucked up the expectations. Trout, in particular, has fucked up the expectations. Like, people, you can see 5-win predictions from guys who have yet to play a major league game and who have 300 plate appearances at Triple-A. Like,
yeah, and people think that, oh, of course, everyone's going to be Mike Trout.
Yeah, it's just a coincidence that as people become smarter, it just happened that the best player in the last 30 years debuted as a 20-year-old or whatever.
Well, exactly. And it's like, it's not even that, like, people expect everyone to be Trout. It's that, like, okay, if he's not Trout, that means he's a 5-win player. it's just horseshit. I don't know
And this is what's awesome about Mike Trout. Everyone thinks, you know, 2012, obviously he had a 10-win season. But when he came up for the first time, he had 40 games where his line was 220, 281, 390. So it's really possible that Chris Bryant comes up and puts up a line very similar to that. and then people are going to just lose their goddamn minds.
Well, and it's, you know, it's not like he would be the first person to have an outrageous spring and then struggle. Like we saw, I'm not going to dig up the stats again this time, but I'm reminded of 2009 Milton Bradley's spring, where he came up and just mashed for about 50 at-bats, and then came up, and we all know how that turned out.
Yeah.
Like, transitioning from the warmth of Arizona to fucking 40-degree days in Chicago is in April is not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to do for a hitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anybody have anything, any other interesting thoughts on that before we move on?
My only thought is that Iowa is going to be awesome to see in April, because you're almost certainly going to see Russell and Bryant and probably Baez, and I want to go, which is the first time anyone's ever said that I want to visit Iowa.
Pierce Johnson, too. Between that and I think there was a period in midsummer where the Des Moines roster was probably a bit more fun because you had Solaire, Bryant, and Baez all at the same time.
Sure.
But, it's certainly the most, and will continue to be, I think, for a while, the most fun minor league roster for the Cubs organization, at least that I can remember seeing.
But it won't be so bad even when those people get graduated, because I mean, there's some talent in Double A. I don't know if Schwarber will make it to Triple A this year.
I don't think there's any way he'll make it to Triple A.
But I mean, you've got like Almora might come up for some, and I don't think his star is as high as it used to be, but there will be prospects to take, like, Bryant's place when he finally does come up.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, waves and waves of talent that they talked about acquiring. It's fun to see. Is there... Here's a fun thought. You think there's anyone that is still... there's some angry guy in, like, you know, suburban Chicago, like some angry guy in Schaumburg somewhere going like, they still should have drafted Jonathan Gray.
I know, I'm sure there's still people complaining about the lack of pitching in the system, but watching Bryant hit all those home runs.
Hey, I'm comfortable with winning games 7-6.
Yeah. Okay. Next on the agenda, we wanted to talk about the fifth starter battle and the sad farewell, perhaps long overdue farewell, not actually farewell, coming farewell in all likelihood for Edwin Jackson. Guys, thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's very likely that he'll never pitch a meaningful pitch for the Cubs. Well, it's possible that he's never actually thrown a meaningful pitch for the Cubs. But I don't think he's going to do one in 2015. There's no space for him. I think Travis Wood's pretty much that fifth starter. He's been pretty good this season, and I think he's just better than Edwin Jackson in general. And I don't think there's any room for him as a long man. I mean, maybe you want to put him in there, but I think if he's not traded, he's probably designated for assignment.
Yeah, we'll just release him. It's been kind of a bummer. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of the Jackson signing. Like, it was just okay, but I was more upset that they didn't sign Anibal Sanchez.
Yeah.
But I've kind of started, I've given up on him. And, I've said in the past failed podcast we did, like, you know, I'm the last guy to give up on pitchers. Like, even after it was clear that Randy Wells was done, I was like, give him another shot. He's got good peripherals. But... And I've been kind of beating that drum for Jackson for a while, too, but at some point late last season, I was just like, no, it's over.
Well, yeah. At what point when do you stop waiting for regression to happen and just accept the fact that this is an outlier situation?
Well, would it surprise either of you if they got cut bait and then he went to Atlanta and was good for, you know, a year? I don't think that would surprise me.
Is Atlanta like one of the three teams he hasn't pitched for in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, well, that's probably why he's been so bad. Is he's just used to packing and going somewhere twice a year. He's been in the Cubs, I think, probably longer than any other organization he's been a part of. So,
you know, at a certain point, he probably should stop treating, you know, jerseys like Pokemon. You don't want to catch them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, first Pokemon reference of the podcast.
I'm sure it won't be the last.
Of course not. Okay, more likely scenario here at this point. Let's play something fun. More likely scenario: Edwin Jackson throws a meaningful pitch in a 2015 Cubs game, or Chris Bryant suffers a tremendous career-altering year-ending injury.
Wait, let's clarify that for a second. Could he be throwing this meaningful pitch for another team in a Cubs game?
Well, I was about to say, I think it's very possible that he comes in the seventh inning for the Rockies at some point and we blow him up. I think there's a chance. If you know what happens if Travis Wood gets a shoulder owie and then they just think, well, we'll give him six starts and see. So, I mean, there are scenarios in which he pitches for the Cubs again, but
I feel like they were starting to build up the idea, you know, kind of like the idea that they're going to carry three catchers, that they might chain like Edwin Jackson with Travis Wood in those fifth starter spots and like pitch mm-hmm. them back to back or something, but I don't think that's super likely.
I think Theo is trying to convince other teams that we have 29 people on our roster, 25. I think eventually he's probably gone, but I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Mostly I just wanted to introduce the idea, the possibility of Chris Bryant having a major career-altering injury, just so it's out there when it does happen.
It would be a very tough thing. It would be a very tough thing to happen. Like,
so we could say we called it, and then everyone would hate us?
Yeah exactly. That's all I
is
want.
Brad Hopp retired yet?
Is who retired?
Is Brad Hopp, the guy that lined the one off Mark Pryor?
I think that was his only good year.
Almost certainly.
It's like we don't get nice things. This isn't going to work out. Like why? Anyway, So we're all pretty much in agreement that Travis Wood is kind of locked up that fifth starter spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would take something pretty big.
Pretty big. Okay. I was trying to make a joke, but I couldn't think of a fat Cubs player. Anyway, most likely, next up on the agenda, we want to talk about who, a lot of people, especially a lot of the young guys getting a lot of hype this season, so far this spring, Bryant in particular, but also Solaire, any other number of people. Who do you have as far as people that you like to surprise Major League Baseball, people that are flying a little under the radar maybe, or just in otherwise exceed expectations? And who do you have that you find as likely disappointment candidates so far? Jeff, start with you.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and start with most likely to surprise or be underrated, I think, is Dexter Fowler, who I thought was a really good pickup by the Cubs, who really kind of has flown under the radar both this spring and in general just because of Bryant and all these guys. But he's kind of the guy this team hasn't had since they had Fukudome, who can actually, like, get on base and stuff. So I think he might maybe not necessarily surprise – I mean,
it kind of became a struggle for Fukudome at the end there.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, a lot of things became a struggle for Fukudome.
Well, like even when he was struggling, like his on-base percentage was pretty good. He was just struggling at everything else. Was the problem?
Yeah. Also, are you saying Anthony Rizzo isn't an on-base guy?
Yeah, but he's not going to be batting first.
Okay.
It would be nice if he would be batting second, but which he's done a few times in spring training, but I don't really see happening during the season. But like the fact that we don't have guys like, you know, Bonifacio leading off, I think will make a big difference, even aside from, you know, Chris Bryant hitting 150 home runs this season.
It's pretty conservative. So as far as mine taking a step forward, I think it'll probably be Arizmendi Alcantara is going to be my pick. I think that he flies under the radar just because there are so many incredible prospects ahead of him, and he didn't do too great in 2014. But I think he has the potential to be a league average center fielder, or second baseman, or maybe even in a Mark DeRosa type role here.
Sure.
What impresses me is that he got better, like, almost every level he went up. And I sure. just, you know, obviously stepping up the majors is the hardest one, but I'm still on the train. I don't think he's going to strike out 31% of the time going forward. He was a decent strikeout guy in the minors, but I don't think he's all of a sudden turned into Brett Jackson. So, and in 300 plate appearances last year, he did have 10 home runs. So there's some pop there. I think he's got easy power. Maybe obviously not like Chris Bryant or Javier Baez, but would it surprise you if he hit 18 home runs, hit 280, and played 600 plate appearances this year? Because it wouldn't surprise me.
This year, those numbers would absolutely surprise me.
Well, sure, because we don't have 11 people that can play.
Yeah, I just don't think he'll get to 600 PAs just because of all the sure. guys around him. But I think if he got 600 PAs, that those numbers wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I see that at this point. Maybe I'm a little lower on him than you guys are. I could see that as a career peak. I think I would have a hard time, you know, even getting the 600 PAs. The power I would think would be there, but I'm less optimistic about actually about him hitting anywhere near 280. Like, I could see him, you know, in that. I could see him turning out to be one of those, like, vaguely Jock Joe. I don't know. I would be surprised if he performed that well this season, but.
And anyway. There is the worry that he always had a huge BABIP in the minors. Like, his career low was .332. So, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously that's not going to happen. But he's a fast guy.
Yeah.
He can steal bases.
I believe in the power. I don't believe in the contact.
Yeah, I'll sure. agree with that.
I just realized that, you know, going through these lists the second time, I feel like we had more energy the first time through. I swear, listeners, we promised this was a vibrant discussion the first time when we were surprising each other. my candidate to surprise is one of my flag guys this year. I think Javier Baez figures it out at some point this season and really turns it on. I think you talk about getting better at every level. I think that's absolutely one of the most impressive things about Baez to me is the ability he's shown to adjust to struggle and fail and then make the necessary adjustments to just destroy every league he's been in. Then I think I said this when we did this the other day, but I think if the Cubs do make a run to the playoffs, it is because Javi Baez figures it out. And surprises everyone. I think that more than anything is kind of where success or failure is going to come from. This season at least.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. He did strike out 41.5% of the time last year, but.
Yeah, well,
I can see it. I'm still on the
bias. You're flying the flag on that. What are you going to do? No.
Yeah, on the other hand, I have Baez as my big disappointment, I think, because, like, I'm not expecting anything at all from him this year, and, like, I'm kind of okay with that. Like, you know, when we talked about this last time, and even just with talking people on Twitter, like, I've been kind of surprised by how many people just assume that Baez is going to make the team and not be sent to AAA. Not only that if he gets sent to AAA, that he's, like, an instant bust, which I guess is also part of this whole Mike Trout thing. And that if you're not going to put up a, you know, just maybe just a 5-war season since you're not Mike Trout, that you're a bust. But you know, but I'm not really that worried if they do send him down because I'm expecting him to struggle this year just because he is just 22, and like unlike Brett Jackson, like you know, it's not like when Brett Jackson came up, it was pretty much just him and scorched earth in the farm system. So
yeah.
a lot of people were you know planting their flag on that.
Don't you talk about Josh Fitters that way?
Yeah. We were big on Josh Fitters in our blog for sure.
I still think if Josh Fitters had stayed healthy, he would have put it together a little more than he did. Like that Triple A season he had. It's over
now. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's good about the 2014 Cubs. Is that Baez can go to AAA, and it's not a big deal because we have actual capable players that are going to be on the Major League roster, which wasn't always the case when we were trotting out Brent Lillibridge and Cody Ransom.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot about Little Bridge.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. No, but you talk about Bias starting at AAA. I definitely don't think it's inconceivable that he could start the year at AAA. I don't know that it's necessarily good for him to do that, just because I feel like, you know, he has shown an ability to mash at AAA, and I think what he has proven is that he is a guy that needs to struggle. I think we talked about that kind of being the purpose of him coming up when he did last year. I kind of think if he's going to figure it out, he needs to just get some at bats in the majors and have the ability to adjust to major league pitching. Because I think he's shown the ability to make adjustments if you give him the opportunity to. That said, you know, I understand that this is a team that has playoff aspirations and may not necessarily want to have a guy in the 8-hole, putting up a 139/234/600/ line.
Yeah.
Well, with Joe Madden, that 8-hole hitter will be Travis Wood. And that's probably a decent line for him.
Sure. I don't know. I would love to see the Baez get the same sort of treatment that Pedroia got with the Red Sox when he came, just sort of, you know, maybe platoon him or something, but like just getting him made outs and giving him a chance to find his footing.
Yeah. I guess I should say too, like I'm not like totally off the Baez train. I'm like, I don't think he's gonna be a bust or anything. I just don't think he's gonna be very good this year. Even if he does spend a lot of time with the Cubs. He's still got a lot to figure out.
I could absolutely see that. That would be a totally fair outcome. But, disappointments, guys. Jeff.
Well, mine was Baez. I just had to jump in on yours. Sorry.
Yeah. Way to fucking steal my thunder. All right, so we've kind of hashed that one out. Miles, disappointments.
Yep, it's not going to be a huge disappointment, but I do think that Anthony Rizzo is probably not going to destroy lefties the way he destroyed them last year. He's traditionally had a lot of problems with them, and I can buy that he's made some adjustments, but he actually hit lefties better than he hit righties last year. I don't think that that's exactly sustainable.
Yeah, that's a safe bet.
I think he's going to be a very, very, very good player for a long time. I don't think he's going to be a down-ballot MVP candidate this year. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he lost, you know, a little bit of a step against lefty.
I'm just looking up his splits against lefties here. Why do you make it so hard to find him slash?
441, 507 lefties last year. His on-base percentage was 48 points better against lefties than righties.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I mean, at the same time, like, not just looking at peripherals, not a ton that stands out as being, like, wildly out of line.
Sure, in 2012, his OPS against lefties was 300 points worse. So sure. I can see some improvement, and I would love to be proven wrong, but...
Yeah.
That's
fair. I definitely agree that we're in for some regression, but you know, he's still a guy that should be getting better every year.
He's 25. Yeah. So he could walk back a little bit against lefties, take a step forward as a baseball player and still be incredible.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that he's not the second coming of Joey Votto, cause who is, but,
Oh, better hope that Marty Brenneman doesn't listen to our podcast.
Yeah. Hopefully he's too busy interviewing for the manager job for the Reds. That would be awesome.
Oh, I won't want that.
Hopefully he's busy filing his retirement papers. I'd be fine with that, too.
Yeah.
My candidate most likely to disappoint, I think... Just there's a subtle hype train, and it has kind of cooled off given the fact that Chris Bryant has blown up everybody's expectations. But especially before the season, people were really, really up on Jorge Soler, and I could see him really having, shall we say, a growth year. Given the way that we talked about this in the when we recorded this the first time, but given the way he sort of fell off towards the end of the season last year, he kind of came back to earth, and the fact that he at this point he's really had, even in the minor leagues, has really only put together one full healthy good season. You know, there's a lot I feel like that can go wrong there.
That's a big question mark with Soler. I mean, if he's healthy, yeah. I think he'll put up a good year, but. The question is whether he gets to, you know, 500 PAs, I think, is the big...
It's a real question.
Question, yeah.
You don't... like people seem to be pretending like that didn't happen. Like, he's... let me look up real quick here, games played. Because it's not been a bit, like... 2013 played in 75 games...
Played in 85 last year, or 86.
Over
four levels.
Oh, yep. I was missing the major leagues. Yep, there we go. So, yeah, he's got to show, the legs are a big concern, because that's been the recurring thing, right? The
fact this is just some freak injury. I mean, it's the kind of thing that tends to occur.
I remember Theo saying that they, like, changed the way he ran or something, which just seems like a total... bullshit answer.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that. Like, how do you teach someone to run?
I don't think it's really possible to tell a 21-year-old, hey, you have to run differently now.
Yeah, I mean, unless this is like Aramis Ramirez, where they were just like, hey, take it easy.
But I think it's a legit concern, and
it wouldn't surprise me at all. It wouldn't surprise me at all. He has frighteningly little experience because of his injuries in... you know, American professional baseball.
He has not played a lot of... He's like that was the thing people were... You know, this time last year, Soler was the most likely candidate to get traded for that reason. And the thing that you kept hearing scouts say over and over again was he's not played a lot of baseball over the past couple of years. Like, he just hasn't. He just very much seems like the most likely candidate to fall down to earth to me, more so even than Baez, I think.
I can see it.
So, all right. I feel like we were talking about... Oh, that was the... I didn't have this on my list. The last item on our agenda, we were talking about the shortstop situation. Who do you guys... This is an interesting question to me. Who do you guys think, September 2015, who is the shortstop for the Chicago Cubs? And why?
I think it'll probably actually be Starlin Castro. I do think Addison Russell will be up, but I think he'll probably move over to third base, which would open the door for Chris Bryant to displace Chris Coughlin, as sad as that might make everyone, I think.
That's actually interesting. So do you see Bryant playing third until Russell comes up? You think that's the move?
Yeah, I don't think Russell's coming up for a while. I think he'll, at very best, he'll just be a super two.
I totally agree. I just think Bryant goes to the outfield before that.
No, I think they'll give him every opportunity to play at third, but...
I'm kind of surprised he hasn't played any left field this spring, but I guess his, you know, shoulder fatigue from hitting so many home runs might be preventing that.
I think I've got Russell. I mean, Russell can... Castro can... But I also think it'll be an asset at third. And if Castro wants to keep playing shortstop and that's where he's most comfortable, then I think that's probably the scenario that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, I also have Castro too, at least for this year. I mean, the only question is, like, I think Castro is going to stay at shortstop, even with all these other shortstops flying around. But the only question for me is, if they're going to flip anyone for more pitching, especially at the deadline, I think Castro is the most obvious candidate. I think that's more likely to happen next year than this year because, you know, kind of along with all this Chris Bryant stuff, you know, everyone seems to think that the Cubs are favorites to win the World Series, which they aren't.
Yeah. I think they're favorites to win 83 games.
Yeah, that sounds good to me, too.
Yeah.
But
I think they're favorites to firmly put the Brewers in last place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I agree with that. I think it actually weirdly depends on who Castro has with his bat. Like, if he comes out and has an all-star season again, I think it becomes a lot more difficult to. I think he stays put at shortstop, but I think if he struggles at all with the bat, like, I think that weirdly makes it easier for him to get moved off of short at a certain point. This may just be wishful thinking on my point, my part, because I think Russell is the better defensive shortstop, and I want to see, I think if you move Castro to second, I think that's probably your best defensive orientation up the middle.
And then you have Brian at third, or do you have Holt or La Stella or what?
I think...
Or Alcantara.
Or the resurgent Javier Baez.
Or Baez.
If I had my druthers, I would have Baez at third, Castro at second, Russell at short, and Brian in the outfield. But a lot's going to have to go right for that to shape up that way.
I think defensively, that could actually be really, really good.
Yeah, it'd be good. But I think by the end of 2016, one of those guys is going to be traded, and I think Castro is the most likely guy.
Sure.
Yeah. Or one of those people will just flame out.
Yeah, there's definitely that too. Like if Baez comes out and has, you know, God forbid a 50% strikeout rate, then that's pretty much bye bye Baez. But I don't know. Like I said, it's probably just when Castro was there first, so he has dibs. Like there's something odd to me about that. But yeah, I think you're probably right. I do think it's Castro that finishes. Probably to the team's detriment.
Well, we'll see.
So, but okay. So, given that, Miles, you said you had Brian playing left field at the end of the year. That was the other. That's really the only other position I think that's in flux right now, other than maybe the catching situation for a different reason. But that was we are pretty much in agreement. We think Brian ends the year in left field.
Yeah. Okay. For a little weird. I mean, it's possible he starts at third or ends at third and Russell just doesn't come up this year.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think will happen, actually. Like, the fact that he's played, like, no left field at all and there hasn't really even been much discussion of it makes me think that that's what's going to happen. Or at least that's what their plan is.
Well, yeah, and that is the thing about Russell coming up is that they thus far have shown a pretty strong reluctance, with the exception of Soler, because it didn't matter, of starting the clock on guys in September. That doesn't seem to be something that Theo and company are a fan of.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see him spend the whole season in AAA. And he was injured for a lot of last year, too, so they might just give him some time to be playing baseball every day.
Sure. How old is he again?
He's 21 and 1 month old.
Oh, man, I am so old.
Okay, that I think that kind of covers my thoughts on it. Anybody else have anything to add before we wrap up here?
Nope, I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we're good. I wish spring training was over.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Basically, I only give a shit about the first game of spring training, and then I'm very much ready for it to be over.
Yeah, there isn't even much in the way of battles. It's just like position battles. It's just the same Chris Bryan hot takes every 2 days, and I'm pretty tired of it.
Well, like, really, yeah. Will Chris D'Onofrio make the team? That's like the most in question roster spot. It seems.
I think the lack of a bunt tournament is really removing the drama from this spring.
I don't know. Maybe with Joe Madden, it could be maybe they're secretly having like a media quote tournament with Joe Madden there, since that's much more his forte.
Like Nate, the video guy, never got a chance to redeem himself.
That was by far the funniest thing about the bunt tournament, for sure. The video guy got to the bunt. Was it the final four he got to? I don't remember.
Didn't
he get to the finals? Like, I thought he got to the finals and got beat out by, like,
it was, like, Bonifacio, or?
Or didn't Darwin Barney beat him out?
Yeah, maybe that's who it was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Cubs so legend. Like Cubs legend Darwin Barney.
Nate the video guy? Yeah, we should put some feelers out there.
Yeah, Nate the video guy would be a great get.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put some feelers out there. Maybe I'll tweet at Farron, see if he has a connection.
Okay, so I found the final four from the 2013 Bunt Tournament. It was Nate the Video Guy, David De Jesus, Edwin Jackson, and Edwin Masonette.
I think the Jesus won it both year. That's who I was forgetting.
I think you did too, but I like that it's 50% Edwin's in the final four, and that was my yearly reminder that Edwin Masonette is a thing that existed.
Guys named Edwin are the new bunting inefficiency.
That was the thing I never understood. Like, what exactly did the bunting tournament entail? Like, what was the, like, how do you, I never quite grasped how you have a bunt tournament.
Well, what they did was, like, they painted different regions on the infield, and they were at different points if the ball ended up there or landed there.
Okay.
So, like, the one little dead zone, like, kind of halfway up the line from home plate to third, where it's, like, the hardest to throw someone out from, was worth, like, 100 points, and... You know, they split up the points kind of from there, from what I remember.
Yeah. Apparently, David De Jesus did win by 10 points, which...
Over Nate the Video Guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I knew he made the finals. All right.
I can't think of a better thing to end it on.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. I think that the thing Nate the Video Guy is a closer, if I've ever heard one. So we're gonna wrap it up. Thank you for listening to the first installment of the Obstructed View podcast. We'll be back soon, hopefully with one that we've recorded on the first try, and we'll try and make this a fun thing. Hopefully, you enjoy it. We're working on getting an iTunes link up at some point. Until then, keep an eye out on the site. We'll have links and information and general mockery of ourselves up there. Thank you guys for, you know, coming in and getting up early on a Sunday to do this.
Absolutely.
Guys, say goodbye to the folks.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you. We will leave you. Kevin Brown is a tire fire. Thank you. See you next time.
Alright, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go for it.
Hello!
Sorry.
Try it again. Oh. Hello! God, fuck! This should go on the podcast.
Yeah, this will be the tag.